Welcome to another session in culture and communication. We've had some sessions now on conflict, how different people resolve conflict, the way in which Westerners tend to do it, the way in which majority world people tend to do it. And now I want to bring to a conclusion in these next two sessions some relevant issues with regard to conflict. And today I want to just return for a moment to this chart, which we had worked on yesterday, and just to review, very often what happens when people take a win-lose position, that is, they always have to win, and then the other people always have to lose, what happens is those around them very often lose a sense of self-esteem and self-worth, and that becomes a very damaging, painful thing for them because it touches at the heart of their humanity. It begins to erode their dignity, and they feel smaller and smaller, and that, of course, is very difficult to handle. So those people very often take a passive-aggressive approach to life conflict situations. Passive aggressiveness is a form of withdrawing or avoidance. That is, it appears that you don't really care, that you're going to be compliant, that you're going to do what you're told, or that you appear that the other person is right and you agree with them. But underneath, you're fighting it. Underneath, you're doing battle and trying to struggle and trying to protect your ego and to survive a little bit. So what happens is that this person really is living a bit of deception. They appear to be one thing when really they're something else. But it's their survival strategy, so it's understandable that they would do this. But as they live in that kind of environment, they become more and more angry. The resentment builds. They become this kind of burning cauldron of acid and difficulties. And so they fight back, but they have to fight back beneath the surface. Eventually, they get a point of power in which they can act out all of their aggressiveness, all of their anger, all of their resentment, all of their need for revenge. And at this point, then, it's open rebellion, and the goal is to inflict as much pain as possible on the person who caused them the pain. So the cycle continues. What I want to take a couple of minutes to talk about now has to do, though, with people who can intervene. Many people are on this track. I think perhaps more young people, younger age, teenagers, early adulthood. But very often, there's nobody there to intervene and to give them a different kind of message, a message that says, you're a valuable person. You have worth. You have significance in this life. You have value as a person. But this is where, in our churches, youth leaders play a very important role. To come alongside somebody and just to say, how are you? What's happening? I'm delighted you're here. Is there something that you're doing this week that I can join you? Maybe some kind of an athletic game or some kind of musical event or maybe some sort of just walking in the park. Just saying that you're worth my time, I like being with you, it's valuable for us to be together, I enjoy you. Those are all important messages for this person to hear. And what happens is it interrupts their anger. It becomes a time of peace for them. And they realize that the world can be a better place. They realize that there are people out there who will help to build their dignity, nurture them as human beings, and they feel kindness and warmth and just have a good overall feeling. But the youth director cannot do it alone. It actually wasn't the youth director in my case, but a number of other adults who were sort of uncles and aunties to me. And they took an interest, not every week, but maybe once or twice a month. Or while we were at church, they would just come and talk to me and say, put their hand on my shoulder and say, how's it going with you? And all of a sudden, somebody is kind. You know, I'm delighted to see you in church every Sunday. That's such a wonderful... You know, you bless me by being in church. Just thank you for being there. That's all it takes, and we can all do that. And we never really will know that we might be saving a person's life from terrible destruction. And if we are all doing it a little bit, a lot will happen. A lot of good will happen. A lot of people's lives will start taking a different course. So instead of following through on the rebellion, we now begin to feel wholeness and healing. And we then are better able to build a relationship with another person. We're better able to build a marriage that will be peaceful, calm, healthy, whole. We're going to raise children differently than we were raised. Those are good things. And so these little acts of kindness, when we all engage in them, will accumulate to an enormous good for other people, for the kingdom of God. Any comments on this before I move on? Because I want to talk now about forgiveness for a few minutes. It's so important in dealing with anybody who has anger, whether they're in this cycle or whether it's just an anger that's burning somehow. But thoughts or comments? Is anger a common emotion in Russia, for example? How do you see it expressed? Vitaly.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think several writers or philosophers noticed that in the Russian culture, people will be keep patient a long time. They'll keep it and keep it and patient and then just burst out with something really big, like revolution, something killing or something, just destruction. Some culture, you know, like maybe in the South, okay, they're very energetic, enthusiastic, and express their things. And here in our culture, they would, okay, they'll keep it. And that's humiliation is part of the kind of like a cultural whole history. The kings, the invasions, there's something, there's this and people learn to be patient, but under this patience, as it seems like a patient, it's really build up kind of anger. Mm-hmm. And it build up, and this can burst to the really ugly thing. Like, I mean, that seems like...
I think that would be true in America as well. Some people keep it inside, and then, boom, all of a sudden it rushes out and does considerable damage. Yeah. Let me talk about forgiveness then. Maybe just a little bit more about anger and then the need for forgiveness as a way of dealing with anger. Those you are angry with control you. Think about it. If you're angry at somebody, that occupies your mind. It taxes your energies. It's what you think about. You can't sleep at night. You have no peace. The anger that you have towards somebody else actually controls you. And none of us want that. So physiologically, anger produces hypertension or high blood pressure. That's one of the physical effects that's most common. So high blood pressure, just anger built up. The whole system now is working, and the blood pressure goes higher and higher. Socially, anger is expressed through impatience, a quick explosive anger, aggressiveness, such as, you know, needing your way, such as road rage, driving your automobile fast and recklessly. Sometimes anger comes out in being competitive, your need to win, your need to be above or higher or better. So there's a lot of social expressions of anger. And then emotionally, we burn a lot of energy on anger. And anger affects our ability to concentrate. It affects our work relationships. In a moment, I'll mention some others as well, but depression often is a result of unresolved anger. Life just gets heavy and burdensome, and people get extremely discouraged or depressed. And then mentally, when we are angry, we tend to get preoccupied with it. We find ourselves talking with other people or complaining about such a person or this person, how bad things are. We can't concentrate. We can't relax because our mind is still preoccupied with these things. And there's nowhere that we find peace. And so physiologically, socially, emotionally, mentally, these are all problems. Anger starts at a very early age. Researchers have found that as young as 2 years of age, children are expressing anger. Five-year-olds have been known to threaten their teacher in preschool or kindergarten. In fact, here's a quotation. One five-year-old said to his preschool teacher, "If you don't let us have our way, we are going to get you. We will find out where you live and we will get you." You say, where did this come from? Where do you think those words came from?
Parents.
His parents. That's what he heard at home. And he's just replicating what the home environment is all about. But is it an interesting now that the five-year-old will stand up to the teacher and make threats and intimidations? What's going to happen to that child when they get bigger and stronger and they can make worse and worse threats and intimidations? I mentioned yesterday a fellow by the name of Richard Fitzgibbons. He says, anger is the major and the most common emotion seen in children and adults. Anger. That's his experience as a counselor and as a psychotherapist. 44% of the patients that he sees had anger attacks in the form of depression. So many of the people who are on antidepressants like Prozac or Valium or something have unresolved anger as a cause of it. Now, there's a better way to deal with anger than drugs. He said that 34% of all his patients had anger attacks in the form of eating disorders. So anorexia, bulimia, there was an active anger. Anger was expressing itself. Now, I wouldn't have guessed that anger was causing eating disorder, but that's the results of this patient's research and experience. 80% of the patients had a passive anger. That is, they just let it live within them, but it wasn't coming out. But it still has its effect as long as you let it dwell inside of you. Fitzgibbons then, as I noted before, said the only way of dealing with anger in a permanent way, the only antidote to anger is forgiveness. So he says that forgiveness then is the major way, the only effective way of dealing with anger. Where some of this early research came out was in the prisons in America. And in the prisons, they were doing anger management workshops, how to control your anger, how to manage it. But they found out that something in the vicinity of 90% of the people who had anger management workshops and then were released eventually, 90% came back into prison. So maybe not, and yet almost all of them were there because of anger. Anger was a driving motivation, usually antisocial behavior as a result of anger towards parents or towards the police or towards society or government or some institution, whatever. But anger drove almost all of the prisoners, was a motivation for their being there. A fellow by the name of Robert Enright, he's actually an evangelical believer. He's a wonderful fellow. He teaches at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which is near where I grew up in Wisconsin, in the educational psychology department. He has about a dozen PhD students, and most of them are dedicated to researching this issue of anger and forgiveness. Enright conducts forgiveness workshops in prisons. And it's interesting, the recidivism rate, the return rate of prisoners after they had forgiveness workshops and been released, is something like 23%. It really works. To forgive, effectively forgive, and to live in forgiveness really takes care of the anger, and it allows you to live at peace with yourself, your family, your friends, with society. And you're now a free person. You're free because you've released the anger, but you're also free because you're out of jail, out of prison. Forgiveness is a decision that is an act of the will. So the first element in forgiveness is to, or in dealing with anger, is to forgive the other person. And this is a cognitive act. It's a mental decision to forgive. It involves the will. It's a volitional choice. I forgive you for what you did to me or what I felt you did to me. It has to be a sincere decision. It's not just something that if you just say these words, things automatically become great. That's not the case. So a decision is no longer to condemn the other person and hold anger and resentment towards him, but to forgive is now to extend grace, kindness, and respect. It's a decision not to perpetuate the anger, but to extend to the other person acceptance and to treat them as a human being. We're going to talk, when we get into the servanthood material, we're going to talk about what it means to be a human being, what it means to have human dignity. And it means now that we have to respect the other person as a person who is an image bearer of God, a person who therefore has dignity and value and worth as a person. And therefore, we extend to them kindness and goodness because that's what nurtures their dignity and builds that dignity up. It also means that we have to forfeit judgment towards them. And instead, we offer pardon. And now, finally, it means we have to let go of our anger, our pain, our resentment, our desire for revenge. It's a huge decision. It's not an easy decision. Usually, forgiveness is a once-for-all act. It was for God. And so when it talks about forgiveness in the Bible, it's once-for-all. However, we have to revisit that decision often because the anger returns. Something triggers our memory and we get angry again. We say, oh, I'm so angry at that person. But now we say to ourselves, but I've decided not to be angry. I've decided to forgive. And you rehearse that decision that you made. When I was doing these workshops in Africa and also in Bosnia and Kosovo and Croatia, we had a symbol is very important in many cultures. It's very important in African culture. I think here too, if you see your churches, you see symbol, and these symbols represent reality, things, spiritual realities. So in Africa, we would give them a piece of paper, and they would write who was the object of their anger. And particularly in places like Liberia and Croatia, they would have some terrible, extremely horrible things that have happened to them. Some things that you could hardly talk about, but they would write them down. They had a chance to share them with others in a small group. Sometimes you'd hear them going, you know, and they were rehearsing something. And some of the stories I heard, I can't even tell you. Then when it came time to forgive the people who hurt them, we gave them a match. And they took that paper and they went over and there was a cross there. And beneath the cross was a place where they could light the paper and burn it and drop it there in front of the cross. It was a very solemn time. Some of them held on to the paper so long their fingers got burned. That is, it's hard to forgive, okay? It's just hard. In Croatia, someone found a rather large cross, and maybe as high as this ceiling. And so we gave them little stick pins, and they put their paper, and they gave it to Jesus. Their pain. Jesus bore our pain. He suffered for our iniquities, and we give them back to him now. He takes care of it. So this is a mental act. It's a choice of the will, and we may have to return to it often. It doesn't mean that you're doing forgiveness poorly. It just means we're human beings, and it means that these things are very, very painful things, that they are not going to go away quickly. So the first is a cognitive decision. The second has to do with the affective part or the emotional part of who we are. Our emotions take the longest to heal. It's the hardest part of forgiveness because emotions touch the very deepest part of us, and it's that deep part of us is where the pain lingers and remains the longest. There are some people who can forgive instantly. That's never been my case. Forgiveness has always been a long, difficult process. But some people, I've heard some stories, read some stories actually, where somebody stole a child and killed a child, and the parents forgave and immediately had this outpouring of love for the murderer, and went to prison to visit him, and actually witnessed to him and shared the gospel with him, with that person. That's not me, but I think that's wonderful when that happens. It's nice that when God forgives us, he takes our sins and trespasses and removes them from us as far as the east is from the west. He puts them in the deepest part of the sea where no one can find them. And he puts them in another place, literally in between his shoulder blades. It's the one place where you cannot ever see. You can't see your shoulder blades. So God does that for our sins. And he, in his pardon, he immediately offers to us love and embrace and care, and we are assured of his forgiveness, his eternal forgiveness. It's a wonderful thing God has done for us in forgiving us our sins and in the pain that we caused him, the pain of the cross because of our sins, see, a human life or God-human life. So what it does not mean, what this forgiveness does not mean emotionally, it doesn't mean that we forget that it ever happened. The human body isn't wired that way. But it does mean that we choose not to dwell on the negative events. We choose not to dwell on the painful experience. In Liberia, one fellow spoke up. There were 500 people in that conference. It was just huge. But one fellow spoke up in the group that I was with. And he said, we must forgive and forget. Another fellow spoke up and he says, I can forgive, but I cannot forget. And then there was more silence. It was a very solemn, somber time. Another person spoke, and he didn't know it, but he was quoting the words of Martin Luther, the reformer. And he said, and Africans, remember how we speak in Proverbs sometimes? He said, you can't keep the birds from flying over your head, but you can keep them from making a nest in your hair. Okay. You can't keep the memories out of your mind, but you don't have to dwell on them. Now, that may be hard, but let me tell you how it helps me, or what helps me in those situations. If I start singing a hymn, or if I read something in the Bible, or if I rehearse God's forgiveness of me and then him calling me to do the same. Or sometimes if I get busy with a favorite project or a hobby, or call a friend, or maybe exercise, do some workout kinds of things. What happens is that when you have dwelled on this pain and anger and this resentment and towards another person or towards a group of people, when that's been part of you for a long time, the wiring in your brain now is very thick and very heavy, and it's very strong. And so the memories keep coming back because everything reminds you of that strong network in your brain about the anger and that event. Now, what needs to happen then is that if you interrupt those thoughts, those negative thoughts, the thoughts of anger and revenge and the desire to get even somehow, when you interrupt that, eventually you interrupt it quickly, and the brain cells that made that network so strong, they begin to fall away, and that network now becomes weaker and weaker and weaker. And after a while, after a month or 2 months or 3 months, pretty soon you don't think of it, but maybe once a day. After a year, maybe you only think of it once a week. It's when you interrupt those paths that reinforce the network, you interrupt those, that network actually gets weaker, and pretty soon you have victory over it. But you have to be diligent, you have to be quick, you have to do it all of the time. The brain is a wonderful thing, but we can control the brain. We can actually, there's wonderful things about how people learn in the brain, but that's another time. So when that anger returns, when the emotional hurt surfaces again, you just remind yourself, I've forgiven that person, and then you automatically do something that will take your mind away from it, and pretty soon the thoughts will not return so quickly. So there's the cognitive part, the mind, which is the choice to forgive. There's the emotional part, which is the most deeply affected, and it takes the longest to recover. But as we practice our decision to forgive and refuse to dwell on the negative thoughts, on the pain, it gets better. Sometimes God does it quickly. Sometimes he does it over time. Now there's a behavioral dimension. How our behaviors are affected here.
TVS is a nonprofit project. Our joint effort will bring about the common purpose of making Christian education available around the world and developing good Christian servant leaders. You have a unique opportunity to partner in this effort through your prayer and/or financial support of TVS Ministry. For more information, please visit www.tvseminary.com.
And what I want to do here is to just draw a little bit of a graph. We start out with negative thoughts, negative emotions, desire for revenge, etc. And then I think we move into a neutral zone where we no longer desire revenge. It would be nice if somebody did it, but we no longer desire revenge ourselves. And but we can't do good towards them because it's just too much for us right now. The emotional pain is still so harsh. So we end up to neutral, but we stop. The first thing we have to do after we forgive is we have to stop the negative behaviors. And at that point, sometimes the best we can do is just to be neutral. Neither do good nor bad. Neither think good nor but not think bad. Just take a little time to heal. That seems to be what happens with most of us. And from there, then, we move into small steps of kindness. In Croatia, I forget who it was. Somebody had told a lie about a person, and as a result, the police came and took the house away from that family. The family who told the lie got the house. And it looks like they're going to keep it now, after the war and everything. So this family had to forgive. They probably weren't going to get the house back. So they had to forgive. And they went into this neutral part. And then, at a certain time, for some it might be several weeks, for some it might be several months, then the woman who was kicked out of her house took some cookies over to the woman who was part of the lie and gave her some cookies. A small act of kindness. And the beginning of healing. Now, I don't know what happened after this. But then, so now you begin the process of healing. And then from here, you go to what I would call a civil relationship. That is where you can greet each other, you can spend a little time talking. You may not ever become best friends, okay? That's all right. But now you're at least openly kind to each other. You're not doing evil things or bad things. Eventually, it would be nice if there was a possibility that you would be friends, but that's not required. Sometimes where there's been abuse in the family, you don't want to be friends because the abuse may continue then. So that would be unwise. Now, a couple more comments, and then we'll be finished with this session. Desmond Tutu quoted a proverb. He was a South African bishop of the Anglican Church. He says, "A person is a person through other people. Only when we are in community are we whole people. Only when we are in forgiving, healing, reconciling relationships can we become whole people. When we are alienated from our brothers and sisters in some way, we become fractured ourselves. There's something missing. There's something that's not functional within ourselves." I think he was wise. Now, forgiveness is not an anti-anger pill. You don't forgive and immediately. So anger has to be dealt with, for most of us, over time. Forgiveness is not blind to justice. So a group of prisoners forgive. You don't open their jail cells and say, "Yes, fine, be gone, everything will be..." No. Justice still prevails, and sometimes compensation is required. I'm dealing with an organization and a family right now where it's gotten very sticky, but at this point, compensation seems to be one of the sticky points. But very often, that has to be negotiated. So if the other couple who lied and took the house, if they in some way became convicted, they should have to compensate or give the house back if they wanted to make things right. Forgiveness is not reconciliation, but it may lead to reconciliation if the conditions are right. Forgiveness is not an act of weakness or giving in. It's an act of enormous strength, enormous discipline, enormous courage. You don't forgive somebody who did something wrong if you're weak. You hold on to the anger if you're weak. If you're strong and courageous, you forgive. In individuals, families, tribes, nations, it is important to break the pattern of refusing to forgive and fostering anger, promoting pain, because the next generation needs you and me to forgive, because it is within our power and it is wise to reconcile with our enemies. It's what God did to us. We were his enemies. He chose to reconcile. Our own healing is transferable to others and to our children. And it promotes wholeness in our children and our children's children and their children. In this part of the world, in my part of the world, we need this desperately.
It just happens in my experience in pastoral care and everything, that counseling families with an affair, that happens. Oh, yeah. So that's probably one of the hardest part, because you said they might never become friends, while kind of church called people, if they forgive each other, there's not just become friends, they have to become husband, wife, or lovers, or something. This seems like some of the hardest or deepest act of forgiveness you have to happen. You can forgive and live away from, but you forgive and live with this person.
Yes.
And always some of the spouse asking, so how we can do this? So it's easier, like you said, forgive the neighbors. You don't. But is there any kind of advices in this area?
Well, you're absolutely right. Of course, that if one forgives, it opens the door for friendship. Forgiveness is also a two-way street. The one spouse has to forgive for betraying the other. The other has to forgive that person for the betrayal, and say, I accept your forgiveness, and I think that it has to be. Usually, it has to be given time. We've known some couples where there was that betrayal and they couldn't manage a future together. And that is sad. But we've known others who have had good futures together. And it does take time. In some sense, it seems to me that they have to live separately for a while and then go back and to restore to see if the basic elements of friendship are possible. And if friendship is possible, then can we be best friends? Can we trust each other? See, what happens in betrayal, it's the ultimate act of a violation of trust, is a betrayal between a husband and wife. That's the ultimate break, violation of trust. So the question now is, what will rebuild trust? Where do we start in the rebuilding of trust? What are the steps that have to be done? And it seems to me the one who is betrayed has to be naming some of those steps in order for that person to feel like trust is possible again. So now we go back and we ask, what is the minimal elements of trust? And then what will build more and more trust? And as they move into friendship again, then you ask, is there a possibility of love? A love that will set aside the violation, a love that will not remember it, choose not to remember it, and then you have a potential then of living together as husband and wife. But that trust process usually takes time, and I would say probably not less than 3-4 months, maybe more, of just building trust, not necessarily living together, nothing else, just coming together to rebuild the trust, spending time. And then as they make progress in that, are you once again best friends so that you trust each other in every circumstance? Now we have the possibility of a full reconciliation to your vows, to your marriage commitment. My thoughts. Anyone else? Let's take a break.
Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way, so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 10-11. How to give to TVS Ministry. You may give online at efca.org/givenow. In the description place, write Russia Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Or make checks out to EFCA. Write on the check memo line, Russian Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Mail to EFCA Donor Services, 901 East 78th Street, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55420-1300. Or send your gift through PayPal for tvs.gift@gmail.com.